I am in heaven. Today is the homegoing of Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. And here's a very interesting fact. You know the Welsh Guard? That's the band that plays its military music with the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace. Guess what they were playing today? Respect. That is so great, I tell you. It's Aretha and everybody. I mean, people are saying, that's how you guys have funerals? Yes, it's a joyous celebration. You've done your time, you've done well with your time. And the community was just overjoyed. They're sad, of course. We're sad that Aretha's life has come to an end, but not really, because her music and her legacy live on. And I like that. I love that. I think it's the greatest tribute ever to a person whose entire life has been about lifting people up, comforting them when they're down, giving them hope, being angry for them when we're angry. What a wonderful testament it is to her life that so many people are touched by this incredible woman. So today there's going to be a huge send-off, and our spirits go with the artists who are performing and the people who will be preaching and just regular folks showing up to say thank you and goodbye. But it really did set me back a bit when the news showed that the Welsh Guard at the Buckingham Palace, they don't play this kind of music. But yes, respect was what the band was playing today. All right, so the Queen got some soul from the Queen of Soul today in London. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eudrice Lead. This is the time that you express yourselves. You know, this is a wonderful thing about PRN. I want to do a spectacular fundraising effort, but I've got to get it together. And I got to get you guys together. We have to demonstrate decisively that we believe in this radio station that keeps us all linked together, keeps us thinking, keeps us learning. And I want, especially for this program, because I'm very, very proud of this program. And I'm proud because we have no heirs here. We are teaching each other, listening to each other, engaging with each other, and creating community together. That does not happen in Radioland. So I want to do it the right way. And together, we make a statement. And that would serve as a template for what people ought to do for systems and organizations that support them. And we should not shirk from our support. So I'm getting this together. And I've had a couple of setbacks along the way. My whole computer life is shot to heck. None of my computers. I'm on my third computer from Microsoft. It's still not working. My Dell computer, which was the old workhorse that I had, it kind of gave up the ghost. And my other computer that I had just simply is not responding right. It's not working right. So here I am in the middle of all these computers, none of which are working. So I have to just solve that problem because I'm in battle with Microsoft at the moment. I'm fighting with them. I'm on my third Microsoft notebook, the Surface Pro. And for me, it has been a wretched experience. It's just not working. It's not charging. And when it does charge, it freezes. All kinds of crazy things are going on. But oh well. And I'm not computer savvy, you see. This is the one failure I have. I know nothing about computers and electronic stuff. I just want to sit down, get my work done. That's what I want to do. But no, Microsoft has other ideas. But anyway, let's get this program started. This is Lead Stories, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. And on your day, on this day, we have so many indications that our opinions do matter. The things that are going on in this world. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's have you do things more concisely. If you can put it together and, shorten it and get to the point as quickly as you can so that you could spend more time debating your point as opposed to leading up to it. All right, we start in Chicago. Henry, what's life like in Chicago today?
Hey, Eutrice, how's it going?
Okay, how's about you?
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. Okay, I got to take issue with you. All right.
Okay.
First of all, what you just said a few minutes ago, I just laid down $700 on a Microsoft Surface.
Oh no.
Oh, God. I just bought it the other day. So now you're like, okay, now I'm worried.
Maybe you have much better luck than me, but this was the third one. This is the third one that I have. And it involved a lot of fighting. So they sent me this one. The first one I got exploded.
Oh my
All right? It
God.
exploded.
Okay.
And they didn't want to take they didn't want to take it back. And I sent pictures and all of that stuff, and it took a long time before they sent one to replace it. And that one was not charging at all. I mean, I tried for 4 days to charge the unit, and it just looked at me and said, "Get out of here. This is not going to work."
Well, you just lost some points with me on that one. But I wanted to call you in regards to the show that you did on Monday. All right. So here's my thing. I think you had a guy named Dr. Corsi, right?
Yes, Jerome
Okay.
Corsi.
So, I was listening to the show on Monday, and I was so, well, not upset, but disappointed with him because he definitely had a one-track mind in regards to this issue of corruption between, the Clinton Foundation, but also the corruption that's going on with our current government. And, I saw that he, well, I was listening and how he was kind of putting you in a box. As you're like some kind of liberal, like you're Rachel Maddow or something like that. And I was kind of disappointed that you didn't let him have it,
Oh
and
no,
not in a
no, I
not
don't do that. I'll
well
tell you why.
not in the mention of emotionalism, but I was gonna think you was gonna, downplay him intellectually because I was like, if you would listen to her shows, you would know that she doesn't think like that. And I was also disappointed in Charles Ortel because he was quiet the whole time. And he's been on your show like about, 100 times. He knows the way you think and he knows your opinion on this. And I was sad to say, because I actually, I respect Charles Ortel's, work, even though he's right leaning, but he's not a right wing nut like that guy was. But it was like, but you know, I was kind of disappointed in him because he knows your views on Russian, you know, so-called Russian hacking of our election. So I was like, I was kind of disappointed in him as well. So can you tell me why you didn't let him have it intellectually like you did some years ago with Mary Lefkowitz and John Henry Clark disease?
Oh, that was a different thing. Well, here's the thing. Here's how I operate, and here's how I think. Dr. Jerome Corsi, this was, what, the second time I had him on the program. You're right. He's very much right of center. And what I respect about him is the amount of energy and effort he invests in research. So that even when you get the feeling that he is, you know, extolling the right view, right-wing view, when you listen to that man, you're listening to somebody who has spent a lot of time and effort and energy in tracking things down and getting it right. You know, whatever his personal quirks are, that doesn't matter to me. And it's not the point. I could talk to anybody, including people I disagree with. But when I see where you're going, the big hump that he's getting over here, and you're right, that places him in many ways in the camp that we're uncomfortable with ideologically. But I'm looking at what is the end result of his research. And it is an eye-opener what this man has been able to discover. And he's not just, you know, a one-track mind. He's not just married to one ideological position. We are clear that he's right of center. But in certain matters, you're looking for clarity, which has no particular ideological mindset of its own. It's just the facts. I did not like, you know, the tone in two instances, you know, when he said that you're giving me an LOL moment. And you know, that's what he said. And then another mm-hmm. comment he made about, you know, basically taking a swipe at the left
mm-hmm.
and taking me along with it. Don't worry about these things. You know why? Because I have the last word. I tell people that all the time. Now, you could come on the program and act a fool, but I have the last word.
Mm-hmm.
Always. I could have you every day for a year. I could unload every day on you. But that's not the way I do things. You know, I love when people challenge you and they want to get a rise out of you. And, you know, they think that, you know, this would be your typical show that would descend as quickly as possible into the pit. And we end up fighting each other. I'm interested in using that time to, let's see if we could unearth things, facts that we didn't know before.
Yeah, well, you know, I was just kind of disappointed that because the show actually started off pretty good. And then there were some poignant questions that you asked about, you know, the current investigation to Russia. And he just totally, like, avoided the question by kind of chiding you about you being a leftist and kind of patronizing you on on that. And it was like, that's when it got shot to hell for me. And I was like, okay, really? Really?
Well, actually,
you know?
it was amusing because it was actually an admission I was getting under his skin by asking him questions And he, I think, was expecting that there was going to be an adversarial situation from the beginning. But that's not it for me. I'm interested in, you know, I don't care what your ideology is. If we could talk about a subject, let's talk about the subject. But I think in a little way, he gave a hint that he did not appreciate the fact that we didn't do the interview Fox News style. We didn't get... I was civil.
And that was my whole thing, because even Charles Ortel, you know, he would even, you know, like he would answer it and he wouldn't imply his, you know, political bias on this stuff. You know, he would just basically say, you know, maybe there's no connection there. And that's it. But he was trying to box you in like you were some, you know, like I said, you were like somebody from MSNBC or something.
Yeah. Well, he learned the fact that I spotted that and I totally dismissed it. I wouldn't go there. I'm still on point with my questions. So you could have an argument all by yourself. And I could see that he was beginning to be irritated by the fact that as hard as he might have been pushing for us to get entangled in a brawl, I was not brawling. Not me.
Well, Eutrice, we got your back, all right? But next time, we need you to body slam them.
But, you know, it's good. Here's the thing that we have to develop. And this is a story that applies across the board. We feel a need always to be in the company of people who think like us. And that's the first thing you need to dispense with. I don't ask on any show that I've ever done, or even when I was doing reporting, newspaper reporting or television, I would never preview a guest or a person relevant to the subject. I would never preview, ever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to know what you're thinking. We'll find out when we start talking.
Mm-hmm.
See? But... For example, as long as Charles and I have been doing these programs together, focusing on the Clinton Foundation, he has one particular view about it, and it's from the numbers view, where he is concerned about the raising and exposing the unprecedented levels of corruption. For me, I'm interested in bringing the Clintons to account for the extraordinary and extreme damage they have done in the black world. So I could get along with Charles every day, no problem. We have never discussed our respective political positions on anything. And I think you're right. I think he's conservative in a political sense. But I don't get the fact that he is an ideologue. I feel that he is dead serious about the matter of charity fraud. Dead serious about it.
Yes. And he is a conservative, but he's respectable. He's respectable.
That's right. And so we could get along all day. I'm not interested in his politics. But I'm interested in the sense that his work, you cannot deny that it reflects an extraordinary amount of time invested in trying to find the truth about these people and exposing them. And that we have in common. I am totally dedicated. The Clintons have to pay to describe the damage that they have done specifically in the black world, it would blow your mind. So I could get along with anybody who has pretty much the same mindset, even though we're traveling on different paths. but we are looking at the same thing in the long run. You see? So when Corsi, you know, he did embarrass himself. Everybody got it. And the reason, and it's a tactic I'll share with you for when you start debating serious folks, you never take the bait. Don't do it. The hotter they get, the calmer you go. The louder they are, the softer you speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
You're not going to go, because like I said, when you look at it, I had the last word. Why am I supposed to get all frantic? I had the last word. I could have the last word 5 days a week for a whole year without him having any input in that. So I don't get upset about these things.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it was better. It was better than like I said, I'm glad you didn't act emotionally, you know, and you would you know, had the stereotype of being the angry black woman, you know. That.
No, far from it. I'm amused by these things because I could see them coming 10 miles ahead. I'm way ahead of you. You know, that's the attitude I take. I'm way ahead of you. It's amusing me that you're taking so long to catch up.
All right, Eutrice, you have a good one.
You too. And have a great weekend, and Labor Day is coming up. Have some fun with your family and your loved ones.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Bruce from Queens, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Eutrice. Respect
hello.
To you and the PRN family.
Thank you.
I just wanted to go back last week. I think you had said that you had came up for visit your aunt on a street in Brooklyn where they used to keep the front of the house cleaned and so on and so
yes.
forth. And then it was the problem you had with this pimp on the block.
Yes.
That had a kind of all kinds of rigmarole going there. I remember you from that was my childhood. In that instance, because I was on the around the corner next to the precinct that the block that this I knew something about you, but I just couldn't picture it. We used to have so much fun back in those days where people used to take care of each other, clean the block. We used to have water going down the streets, keeping the sidewalks clean and flushing
yes.
the stuff to the corner. And we had so much fun. And I went to that school right across the street, PS 44. And
yes,
we used to have the Jazzmobile that used to come on out on Monroe Street, and we used to have free jazz. And that's where I got my introduction to jazz, besides the Happy Land and Social Club that used to be on Troop and Gates. I remember you brought back a flood of memories, and I do remember you. I do remember you, my child. It was brief. But we used to be right on they used to close the block off, and they used to have a lot of things for the kids in the summer, the Jazzmobile. They had the little trucks that go up and down with the, like a swing. Like, I remember vividly, and that's the way people used to do back in the days, take care of each other and keep the block clean. They used to have the water come sanitation, bring these trucks down there to flush the muck in the gutter down to the corner where they could just keep it, just take it away. You don't see that nowadays. People just don't care for one another like they used to do back when I was coming up. And I just wanted to thank you for bringing back a cornucopia of memories.
Ah, how about that? So
yes.
It's a very interesting world. Who
oh,
could
yes.
ever have predicted that we would meet up these many years later? But
yes.
I wanted to ask you, was it
yes.
how did it strike you what I was talking about on the block? The experience of living on that block with people who took such great pride in it. And before long, just one person, this guy who shows up, and it's drug dealing and it's prostitution and it's shootings and whatnot. And then the whole thing falls apart.
It was a decline in the neighborhood because that had so much negative feelings toward it. And like you said, people were active in the block association, and it seemed like the precinct couldn't do nothing because they allowed it to go on. They knew what was going on, but they allowed
it. They did.
He was a homeowner. They couldn't do nothing about it. Wait a minute, you are the law, and you're right around the corner from where this guy lived at. I know him very well. I know his name and everything. Mm-hmm. He tried to become legitimate later on in life, and he's still there, if I'm not mistaken. But he done toned it down a lot. But the devastation he did on that block was tremendous. And it had an influence on every block around there, and I think a 360-degree radius and going out, that it had an impact on that community. Because Bed-Stuy was a beautiful community back in there, back in the days. It was just a great place to live, and I'm glad I grew up there. It wasn't all perfect, but you figure – we had 7 churches on Gates Avenue, a precinct. It shouldn't be nothing going wrong on that block, but it was. In that neighborhood, it was starting to go on declining, 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 and people started moving out. It was just a lot. And I witnessed that. But I remember the days where it was a Seymour store was right there on the corner. It was a Jewish store. People were short. He didn't even care. He used to give people stuff. You know, I mean, it's right on 101 Troop.
Uh-huh.
And the school was right across the street from Seymour Store. And I can remember your face because your face was fresh. You were like new. You know, I can remember, you know, it was a close encounter, you know, where we all children were there playing together and having a good time listening to jazz. And people having food there in the street, you know. And I never met your, I think he was with your aunt, you said?
Yes.
And I never met her, but I know how people used to clean and sweep in front of their old buildings and made sure that the garbage can tops were on top of the garbage cans. And if it got windy, they used to get a brick and keep the garbage can top down. I mean, people cared, but it just started to. It was just like somebody or some force was just eating away and chipping away on the beautiness of, that's the word, on the beautifulness of the way people used to treat one another and so on and so forth.
Yes, it was a very beautiful experience living on that block. And it was also a heartbreaking experience to see one individual change the entire nature of the block and surrounding areas and brought it down to a level where nobody felt proud of living on that block. Nobody wanted to live on that block. He continued to thrive because, of course, he was in the business, the drug dealing, the prostitution, the gun running, the unofficial bar. Running out of the house, you know, it was just a shame.
It was truly a shame. That's right.
Well, thank you for bringing back and sharing these memories, Bruce. I appreciate it.
Oh yeah, I'm there. Treasures.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Great week. I'm going.
Thank you, Harvey from Berkeley. You're on the air.
Hi, hello, wonderful you, Chief.
Hey, wonderful Harvey.
I have
What's
a little
going
joke?
On in your neck of the woods?
Well, I have a little joke for you first, and then I'd like to tell you what I want to talk about.
A guy
goes into a dentist's office and says, "I think I'm a moth." And the dentist says, "You think you're a moth?" He says, "I don't know if I can help you with that, but there's a psychiatrist a couple blocks over." And the guy says, "Yeah, I know. I was over there, but he was closed." So the dentist said, "Well, what are you doing back here?" He says, "Well, your light was on."
Now that's funny.
Thank you.
That's a good one. That's very funny. Well, I didn't see it coming, but it was once you delivered the punchline, it sure was funny.
Good.
So what are you talking about today?
Well, I'd like to talk about another idea of shifting away from fossil fuels towards renewable energy. And as our nation transitions to electric vehicles, there'll be less tax revenues derived from the sale of gasoline and diesel fuels. And to offset this loss, cities, towns, and communities can create a new form of tax revenue called park and charge while helping to reduce their local carbon footprint. And this is a technology called inductive charging, also known as wireless charging, that uses electric coils, like two electric coils, to create an electromagnetic field between two objects that transfers electricity. And an example is a wireless toothbrush. You know, these toothbrushes that are electric, and when you finish with them, you put them back in this cradle, this holder that's plugged into the wall. And this is inductive charging, where the toothbrush, the batteries in the toothbrush, are charged by the electricity in the cradle. And so it's sort of wireless. And in this case, electric cars are charged while parking by an inductive charging plate that's embedded in the road under the front of the electric vehicle. And the electricity to power the park and charge parking meters, would come from solar installations located on top of city-owned and leased buildings like fire stations, schools, police stations, city halls, senior centers, recreation centers, municipal garages and offices, etc. And the new park and charge meters would accept both credit and debit cards as well as currency, and the cities and towns and communities can issue their own park and charge debit card, which would become a new source of ready cash to help balance the city's budgets. So this would help to offset the loss from the reduction of fossil fuels as we move toward electric vehicles. And I think park and charge will become the smart way to park, where you not only park your car, but it charges your car while in the parking space through inductive charging, and then you leave with a full charge from your parking space.
Hmm. You always bring us some really extraordinary things to consider in, you know, looking on the other side of the fence of fossil fuel use. Thanks so much. Thanks a lot, Harvey, for your call today.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Julie, what have you to say?
Hello, Yatrice.
Hello.
And to the PR.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. Yatrice. Are
We're
you
spending
there?
A lot of time saying hello to each other. That's good.
Okay. So I tried to get in the other day when you were having the discussion primarily about the political discussion, and I didn't get the names of the people that were speaking because I thought I was going to get in at that point. But one of the comments was that people have fallen asleep and that weren't engaged. And the young man, I forget how he said it, but it was something hopeful that in the future you would be enthusiastic enough to vote again. So I wanted to just share something that I've been working on with the independentvoting.org. We've been doing a survey, 9 questions for the 44%. The goal is to do 5,000 by Labor Day, 2,500 online and 2,500 in person. So that's something I have been working on. So for people that are interested in looking at this from another angle in terms of moving away from the Republican-Democratic scenario that we've always known, at independent voting, our strategy is to connect and empower the 44% and people that identify as independents, and to work on, and while Trump's been in office, our focus, rather than protesting him the whole 4 years, We've been looking at ways to remove the structural barriers. And there's been some success in different parts of the country. So if you look at, for people that are interested, if they could take a look at independentvoting.org and the Open Primaries website as well, I just wanted to offer that as some encouragement that there are efforts going on other than protesting Trump, which he needs to be protested. But that is something that might give people that have not voted at all, because people that were, well, in my case, since I voted for Jill Stein, there were so many people. It's like, oh, you people that voted for Jill Stein, when it really wasn't the people that voted for Jill Stein. It was the millions of people that didn't vote at all, that have become so disengaged that they don't feel as though they have anything to vote for. So along with the success of many of the progressives now and other movements like independent voting, I just wanted to offer that as an encouraging sign.
Let me ask you, why is it that the Independent Party, which I would agree with you, it has something worthy to consider as an alternative to the, you know, the uniparty of the Democrats and the Republicans, but it seems like it just hasn't gotten off the ground. What is the issue there?
Well, now I'm not a member of the IDC. I'm not a member. Independentvoting.org is not a party per se. So okay. I think that there is an IDC that I'm not a part of. In fact, when I say that, people look at me because there's a lot of confusion about that. And there is an independent party here in New York, but I'm not a part of that. Independent voting that I belong to is a national strategy organizing center. So we are... Yeah, so we're not actually a party. We're trying to what we believe is that you should not have to belong to a party, which is like a private club, in order to vote. So we're working on changing the structure so that you do not have to belong to a party.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense to me now that you've explained it. It's not a party, but it is more about changing people's attitudes to get them out of the, you know, a bipartisan thing of having to, or thinking that you have to choose Democrat or Republican, but you can choose a different path and to develop an interest in examining alternatives to Republican, Democrat, you know, the tradition of voting.
Yes, that's the structure that we're working to change. So that's just something I wanted to offer. So for those that are interested, if you the results of our survey will be out September 24th. We're having a conference call at that time, and also if for those interested would look at the website. There are many articles there, and one that I'm looking at now is from a doctor up in Harlem. And just to offer further emphasis to what we said, her recent article in the HuffPost is "The Two-Party System Keeps Racism in Place." There are many articles there that explain why we want to change the overall structure, and that's what we've been working on, you know, in recent years, and that's something that I've been committed to. So I just wanted to share that with everyone.
Well, thank you. And now that you have pulled my coat, I will look into it further too and see if we can have some discussions about that, because it's a very good idea. And I think it's time has come. You know, it's time to get out of the two-party system way of thinking. Thank you, Julie, for your call.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks so much. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Trish. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling in.
Sorry you're having technical difficulties over there, but you know, this new age of technical stuff is always breaking down somehow. But we'll get through
thanks. It.
I just wanted to mention just the one thing about the Monday show with the, because that's not what I called to talk about, but it seemed like when you mentioned Russia, you pressed a button on that guy and he was, he started like attacking you about not voting and this and that. But I think it was about the Russia thing, because I get annoyed also because people, we want to still think like Nikita Khrushchev is running that country over there. I feel like we helped them rebuild when the Soviet Union fell apart, and they ferry our astronauts up to the space station up there. And I never hear anybody mentioning that on the news or anything, that the Russians are responsible for getting the astronauts up to the space. And that's like a conflict to me that I don't see how Russia, you know, I just saw it that way, that he was sort of like put off by you mentioning Russia.
I still think, by the way, that he has a great deal to contribute to our understanding of what is loosely called the deep state. He has spent a lot of time, and nothing that I have read of him, you know, his writings, has been contradicted. When he tells you this is what is going on, it is a sure bet that it is after doing a lot of investigation, and he's got the paperwork. So I respect that.
Yeah, I'm sure Charles Ortel's a colleague of his, and they're both two quality men. I agree with you on that. I think he had a lot of good information. I just thought he got put off by talking the Russia thing, because, like, we're all so afraid of Russia. Russia's a come of Russia, but we don't. We want to keep overlooking that we're probably, they're our best ally, and we play good cop, bad cop all over the rest of the world with people. And when we attack Syria, then Russia comes to their aid like they're the good cop. And when they're messing with Georgia and the other countries by their border, then we come to rescue them, and we call them bad. So it looks like a game going on with Russia and the United States are playing some kind of game. But, the glaring thing to me was the day Trump was supposed to, the next he was going to meet with Putin in Helsinki. And the very day before, he's scolding Merkel for buying too much energy from Russia when he knows he's going to just go meet with Putin the next day. And I guess that's par for the course with Trump. He doesn't care anything about what he says, but he's telling Merkel that she shouldn't buy so much energy from Russia because Germany's totally dependent on Russia now for their energy, and she should buy more from us instead.
It's part of the delusions that Donald Trump has been living with about the power of the United States to tell the rest of the world what to do. Compounding that is his distaste for women who are in leadership roles. He really despises Merkel and has treated her, I think, in an unacceptable way as a head of state. And I thought the Republican Party and Congress and everybody else should have censored this president by now regarding his behavior, just his basic behavior. He has the manners of a blue-nosed mule, and he continues to show it in public as a way of getting people irritated, you know, and it's another way of bringing attention to himself. He doesn't care whether it's bad or good. Just talk about me. But Merkel, right, he should bear in mind, has a very strong education. She has great capability as a leader. The German people seem to think so, since they reelected her. And she has a different approach about how the world should be operating, how the nations of the world, especially the so-called leading nations of the world, ought to be operating. It's a far more progressive attitude than the president of the United States has. So all the more reason that Trump can't stand her.
Right. I just found it funny that Putin probably didn't even say nothing about it. You would think that he would be...
No, that thing is, look, we have our own thing to take care of. This is something Americans need to do. Americans need to convey to the President of the United States that being or continuing to be a male chauvinist pig this many years after the concept was laid to rest, it doesn't win anything for the United States. It does not make him attractive either as a partner or potential partner in, bilateral talks and bilateral projects. And it doesn't. He excludes himself. His behavior is atrocious, but it's part of his mental illness, I think, and that people have elected to overlook. He's just, his manners are just, that's what my mother would call it. You have the manners of a blue-nosed mule. so he seems to think that it works for him.
Yeah, I think we just took offense I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the man that was speaking with Charles Hotel, but I think we just took offense because we don't like anybody saying things to our wonderful Eutrice. So we didn't like.
Look, I could handle it, and I appreciate your sentiments. But one of the things I want us to deal with is our own prejudices. We are very uncomfortable about dealing with people who are or are perceived to be ideologically different from us. I'm interested in the work that they're doing and whether there's reason to look to what they're doing as a useful element in our continued political work. We don't have to see eye to eye ideologically with people we engage with. And this is, I think, a deficit across the board. We talk to people we like, people who we think will like us, and we do not pay attention to the work that they're doing. There are many people who may be very different from us ideologically, but the work that they're doing is beyond reproach. They have put in the necessary research and time and whatnot. They have serious credentials. What they think, to me, ideologically, is not the top of my concern, not at the top of my list.
Right.
So I could talk to anybody.
Well, do I still have time to discuss what I wanted to really call about? I mean, I took up enough time
already.
We're
running close because we have some people who have not yet gotten in.
It's just very important, and I just want to get it in because I couldn't get in on Tuesday. I think you had us calling about the child abuse and the sexual abuse to children by the nuns and the priests. It's just such an egregious thing that they should do such a thing to children because they take an oath to uphold God's law, and they're supposed to be guidance and counselors to us. And our parents tell their children that they can trust clergymen. And when you go to a church, you feel like you're in a sanctuary and it's supposed to be a place where you're protected from evil. And the opposite is going on, and it's a really big disgrace. And I think these priests and nuns should be dealt with in a much harder fashion than even regular citizens because of the fact that they are supposed to be upholding God's law. You know, there's many laws and there's God's law.
There are a number of impediments that historically have plagued the Catholic Church in observing and upholding the law. You know, I think you know, the Catholic Church, the Vatican, is an independent country.
Right.
Okay. So the Pope of Rome isn't just the head of the Catholic Church. He's also a head of state. Now, this complicates things because now if the secular world were to become involved in matters concerning the Catholic Church at that level, we have the complicating factor of where do you draw the line? Who ultimately has power over these kinds of issues? Would it be the local authorities? Would their authority and power precede or even overtake the power of an independent sovereign nation that sets laws for its own membership? It's a very complicated thing. But either way, it is a matter that has been avoided to the extent that now in this situation that you just talked about, you have tens of thousands, and maybe even more than that, of people who have been brutally assaulted and even deaths. But who takes charge of the investigation? Since, as I said, the Pope is both the head of the church and the head of an independent country. Now, people may not realize it, but, you know, the Vatican City is international sovereign territory. You see? So this is the interesting impediment to really getting at the root of many of the things that are wrong, including the church has been accused for decades of money laundering, drug money, big time money laundering. The church has been accused of land grabbing and land theft, a lot of crimes that would be prosecuted in the real world. People kind of take a hands-off position and say, well, you know, this is like declaring war against an independent country. So what are the rules? I don't think we understand them. I don't think they're sufficiently clear as to who has power and authority in a number of likely scenarios that have in fact occurred. These are not theoretical things. These crimes have occurred, and there ought to be some kind of a reference guide as to who is in charge when XYZ happens. We don't seem to have one. And as a result, it makes it easier for people, forces on the inside, to hide crimes and to continue to hide crimes and to engage in major crimes. I'm talking now billions of dollars when we're talking about money laundering. Billions of dollars. Who is accountable? And why is the church not accessible? And why can the church successfully put up legal impediments to getting these answers by getting investigations done simply because it is the church? Big questions. Big questions. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, it's very frustrating.
Thanks a lot for your call today. Willie from Brooklyn, you have the last laugh. You are the last caller today.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, you, Teresa. Listen.
Thank you.
Last week, we spoke about Aretha. Was it last week or week before? I just want to say this. She is Aretha is one of the finest human beings ever walked on this earth. Not because of her voice, because she gave a message that the world has lost. The two most important things, in my judgment, that anyone could give anyone, is number one, respect. And that's why we're in the mess we're in right now, because nobody has any respect anymore. And number two is information. And you guys, you could call me Mr. PRN, because, you know, I got T-shirts and cap and all kinds. And that's what I want to see, because the reason why I think we're not as good as we could be, because if we were doing our part, because you guys are doing your part, we would be half of America, or three quarters of America would be members of PRN and support the station and the programmers, in my judgment.
Well, I thank you for that, and I'll put it to the test very soon as I get ready, technologically correct, and do my work. But I think you're right. When an institution supports the broader needs and objectives of the population, we shouldn't have to beg people. We shouldn't have to cajole them. They should know right off the bat. This is vital to our survival, vital to our progress and support. But that's okay. If I have to work a little bit harder, I don't mind. Believe it or not, I love it. I love when I was at the other station, I was one of the top fundraisers. Because I used to have such good fun. And encouraging other people to look at this not as, you know, something... A thing that they have to do, but something that they'd love to do. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. Thanks, Willie, for your call. And enjoy the weekend. Surround yourselves with great people. And we'll see each other after Labor Day. Bye-bye.